So, some of you may know, some of you may not know, but I actually really enjoy superhero movies. I mean, I'll look at you. Who doesn't enjoy a superhero movie, Joe? We all enjoy superhero movies. But actually, I really enjoy them, especially the origin stories. I don't know what it is. I guess I really like this idea where you see some sort of man or woman, and they don't quite know what they're doing. They get into these superpowers, and they're figuring it out, right? And I love to see how they just kind of sort out who they are and what they're going to do and what they're going to be to this world. But I've noticed something in every single origin movie, in every single time when a new superhero comes to the forefront, to our movies, to the world, right? They always make a change. They're always breaking the status quo. And so you know the scene, all right? It's a superhero's first time. There's Spider-Man. He's coming on with his Walmart mask, you know, and he's coming in, and everything is normal. Everything is normal, right? Everything's going to plan. That's a different, that's crossover right there. But yes, the Joker says, everything's going according to plan. The good guys are doing the good guy things, right? The bad guys are doing the bad guy things. And the victims are doing the victim things, you know? Right? You got the good guys, the bad guys, and, you know, there's always some sort of problem going on that the superhero has to come in and fix, right? So you see him coming in, and there goes Spider-Man, pow, 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 with his webs, and he saves the day, right? And I've noticed that in every movie, this kind of leads to discussion amongst the rest of the world. People start talking, you know? Ah, who is that guy, right? What's he doing? Well, who is this guy and what is he doing? You know, some people like him. Oh, he's coming to save the day. Some people hate him because they're the bad guys. Oh, you know, he's getting in the way, right? The news gets a hold of it, and everybody's wondering. And really, it is these two questions that always come to the forefront when anytime anybody breaks the status quo. Two questions come to the forefront. What are you doing, right? What are you doing? And who are you? Maybe those orders are reversed, but it's the same question. Who are you? You saved my life. Who are you? Right? You took me down. Who are you? And what are you going to do? What's your game plan? And you know, that's true to the superhero world, but I think it's also true to real life, right? For example, if you and I were at Lakeside Joondalup, right? We're walking down in the shops, and all of a sudden, I don't know, Westpac gets robbed, right? If I pulled out a gun and I said, hey, you, freeze. What are you going to do? You're going to look at me, what are you doing? Right? And maybe do you have a change of pants? No, what are you doing, Joe? Put the gun down. What are you doing? Right? And if you can imagine, if I actually do go over to the bad guys and I do make a citizen's arrest or something, you know, either the bad guys are going to ask me, like, who are you? Or the cops who come a little bit later are going to be like, who are you? What gives you the right? Like, why do you have a gun? All right? Who are you? And you know, this concept is exactly what people are asking Jesus. Because Jesus comes in and he's got this way of seeing the status quo, the things that are normal, and he has this little way of, well, breaking it. Right? And in our passage today, not only does he break it, he does it in such a controversial way that it not only are you going to ask the question, like, you're forced to ask the question, Jesus, who are you? And Jesus, what's your game plan? What are you going to do? So let's turn here. You can put it up here on the screen. I'm going to set the scene. I'm going to set the controversial scene that Jesus does. Actually, John does it for us. So 5 verse 1. Perfect. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus, here he comes, went up to Jerusalem. All right. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has 5 roof colonnades. Man, I really love how John writes. He's got so much description. It makes you like you're really in there. You know the pool, the one with the 5, like the 5 colonnades? Yeah, that's the one we're in. Sets the scene. I love it. And in these lay a multitude of invalids, blind and lame and paralyzed. And one man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. Here's the status quo. Jesus comes on the scene, and he comes up to this pool, and there's been these people, multitude of people who are lame. They can't move. They're blind. They can't see, or they're paralyzed. They literally can't move a muscle, right? And there's one guy who's been there for 38 years. You go up to this pool. You're expecting this. You're expecting to see him, and you're expecting to see this multitude. So Jesus check this out. Here it comes, verse 6. When Jesus saw him lying there, and he knew that he had already been there a long time, Jesus comes up and he said to him this very striking question. Hey, do you want to be healed? Really, Jesus? What kind of question is that? Do you want to be healed? I've been here for 38. And look at this guy. Look at his answer. The sick man answered him. He doesn't even say yes or no because it's an obvious question. Sir, I have no one to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I'm going, another steps down before me. I want to be healed, the guy says. Of course I want to be healed, but here's the problem. I can't. You know, so there was this theory, there was this popular belief at the time that if an angel came down and stirred up this specific pool and you were the first one to get in there, you could be healed. And so all these people were waiting there year after year, hoping to see a little stirring of the water, hoping they were the first one in. And this is what this guy's saying. This is my hope. But guess what? I can't do it and no one's here to help me. So Jesus says, well, really? Well, if that's what you want, verse 8, get up, take up your bed, and walk. And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed, and he walked. Now, you might be thinking, that's the thing that's going to get the town talking, right? I mean, Jesus just literally healed a paralyzed guy by just speaking to him. But surprisingly, that's not the controversial bit. That's not the thing that got the town's attention. That's not the thing that broke the status quo. It's the next few little words right here. Now that day was the Sabbath. If this was a movie, guys, bum, bum, bah, you'd hear a cry, like you'd hear like a woman screaming, a baby crying. Like, this is the scene. This is what's going. It's like, no, you didn't. No, he didn't, right? And John's saying, yes, he did, right? Because the Sabbath was a holy day. This was a very, very holy day, a sacred day for the Jews. See, the Creator God said to created man, he said to creation, on this day, above all, in Exodus, you can read this, above all, you shall respect this day. You shall obey this day. This is a day of rest. You shall not work on this day. And that was the mindset. Because if you did work on this day, said the Creator God, if you did offend this day, if you did break it, you should be put to death. It was a life or death thing. And so the Jews, I mean, they were so scared of breaking this rule that they would actually, you know, so if God, for example, said, all right, don't touch this, whatever this is, right? The Jews would make a fence around there and say, you know what, actually don't touch the fence. Because we don't even get so close to breaking God's law. We don't even want to get there. So they built these kind of funky walls around them as safeguards. But they didn't want to break God's law. However, when they see somebody here, look at verse 10. So the Jew said to the man, what's happening is Jesus just told a man to take up his bed and walk. And that was one of the rules. It was a no-no. You don't pick up stuff. You don't take things from the public to the private or the private to the public. You don't do that. And so when they see this man doing this, well, let's look out for our two questions. What are you doing and who you are? So, Jesus said to the man who had been healed, dude, what are you doing? It is the Sabbath and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed. You get a death wish, man. Put it down. What are you doing? What are you doing? And this guy's, whoa, 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 right? But he answered them, the man who healed me, hey, hang on, that man said to me, take up your bed and walk. That man said to me. So they asked him, and here's our second question. Who said this? Who is this man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? What are you doing and who is this? What's going on here? Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, and there was a crowd in the place. Now I'm not sure if they took like maybe a big deep breath of, oh, okay, we don't see this guy, maybe we can just sweep it under the rug. You know, you just put your bed down, and you go on your merry little way, and we'll pretend this never happened, right? I'm not sure if that's what it seems to be, that kind of thing. But the problem is, when it comes to Jesus, he's going to be very, very hard to sweep under a rug. And they're going to find out. Because look, afterwards, Jesus found this guy in the temple going on with the regular life, with the status quo. And he said to him, "See, you're well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." That's kind of an odd thing to say. All right? And we're going to come back to what Jesus means by that. But Jesus makes an appearance. And this guy says, the man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who healed him. I don't know. He sold him. I'm not sure what he did. Maybe they made a deal. Listen, you go on your way, and if Jesus comes, you tell us and everything will be forgiven. Maybe we can make this all quiet. Maybe we can put this back to the status quo. And this is where we pick up in our verse, in chapter 16. You can follow along on your paper from here on out, right? And I did forget to say, if you do have a question, now that you're looking at your paper, there is a number on the bottom. At any time, just give a text in. Kiz is going to get that, and we'll answer any question that you may have from here on out. And this is why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. You remember when I told you that Jesus was really hard to sweep away and put under the rug? Right? I can imagine the situation, right? Because Jesus, did you notice, doing these things? This isn't the first time. They're like, "Jesus, what are you doing?" And he's like, "Well, I'm doing this." "Well, stop doing that." But he wouldn't let up. That irritating Jesus wouldn't let up. Right? And so what are they doing? Well, this is why they're persecuting him. Jesus, what are you doing? Stop doing it. Stop doing it. And finally, why are you doing this? Finally, Jesus says, "Okay, listen, you want to know why I'm doing this? Let me tell you what I'm doing. My Father is working until now, and I am working. Why am I doing this? Because this is who I am, and this is what I do. I am God, and I am working." That was not the right answer, right? Because if you're Jesus and you're wanting to stop a controversy, this is not the way to do it. Because this is putting petrol on the fire. Oh, it's already one thing enough that you're breaking the law, but Jesus right here just put himself in the camp of God. How do I know this? Well, first of all, read verse 18. This is why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. See, on the Sabbath, everybody knew that creation didn't work. All right? The created man didn't work. Everybody knew that. But if you had to be technical, I guess there was one who could work, and that was the Creator God. I mean, think about it. Because if God took a day off, right, then the sun wouldn't come up and the moon would, and my brain wouldn't stop thinking, my heart would stop beating. Right? God needed to work. It was essential for God to work for us to live. Right? Jesus saying, "My Father is working till now, and I am working," is saying, yeah, see me? Who am I? I am in the God camp. I'm doing God work. And they wanted to kill him. Now, I want to take a little bit of a moment here and say, you know, it seems often it seems like when we read the New Testament, we get to hear about the Jews and we hear people like the Pharisees. They always seem like they're bloodthirsty kind of guys, don't they? They always seem like they're out for blood. But before we start pointing the finger and judging them like, "What are you doing? This is Jesus," right? Let's put this kind of like in our level. This would be kind of similar if somebody went to Mecca with a handful of bacon and a pocket full of pork chops, right, and said, "Hello, I'm Allah. And by the way, you don't need to do the pilgrimages anymore." Now, would any of you guys bat an eye if they said, "Get out of here"? Or what if somebody came up here and said, "By the way, I'm God, and you know what? You can skip church now, or you know, you can murder or whatever." You would be like, "Ah, really? No." Like, you wouldn't put up with it. Now, for the Jews, this was such a sacred and holy day that if somebody were to break the law, they were commanded by God to actually put them to death. So in their hearts, though misguided, as we'll see, they were actually trying to do the right thing, right? And this is really cool, and I think this is something to pick up because Jesus knows this. Right? He's doing something radical here. And he's not just going to go and walk away without explaining it. You know, he don't just say, I'm God, and walk away. And in his mercy and in his grace, he's going to say stuff for them and for us so we understand more who he is. What does it mean that he's God and what he's going to do? Because really, the question is, what do you mean you're on equal power with God? Because you could take that many different ways, surely. Like, are you a different God? Opposing God? Like, are you a new God? What do you mean? So Jesus makes this very clear in the next verse, verse 19. So Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing on his own accord, but only what he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, that the Son does likewise. And this is our first point that Jesus wants to make clear. He's saying, look, the Father and the Son are united in the same work. Look, listen, I know this is hard for you to understand, right? And I know this seems different, but hold on. Before you call out for my blood, just hear me out. It's not as bad as you think. I'm united. I am not an independent God. I'm not a new God. I'm not a different God coming to the scene. You know in those superhero movies when like Spider-Man's going down and he's kicking butt, it always seems like the police actually are kind of like, who is this guy? You know? Who is this guy? Because he's not wearing a badge. He doesn't got the hat, right? He may be doing the same work of us, but who is he? They're not united. And so there's this little bit of, Jesus is saying, that's not me. I'm not a vigilante God. I'm not a new God. I am the same God, the God you know, and we are united. I can do nothing, he says, unless the Father tells, like the Son can do nothing of his own accord. It doesn't work. The Lord your God is one. I and my Father, we are united. But more, actually, I know it seems different, but we're doing the same work. And this is cool for two reasons, right? The first reason is we're doing the same work. He's saying, listen, I know it seems different, but don't worry, it's actually the same thing, right? I'm doing the same thing that God is doing, so it's okay. But secondly, listen, if I'm doing the same thing God is, that means, and listen, this is really cool, if you're seeing the work that I am doing, you're actually seeing God's work. How cool is that? Looking at Jesus, he's saying, I actually am revealing the Father. And he's going to flesh this out a little more in this next verse. Right? Because I know it seems weird. But the second thing I want to say before you start calling for my blood again, before you start calling to murder me, listen, and this is the next thing. He says, the Father and the Son work for you. They work so that you may marvel. Check it out. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he is doing. And greater works than these will he show the Son so that you may marvel. You know, I know this seems weird, but if it does seem strange to you, that's okay. Because to marvel at something, he's saying, because I want to show you that it's not a human thing. I'm doing these things so that you can see that this is not coming from a human mind. Listen, I have the inside track with God, says Jesus. Look at it. The Father loves the Son and shows the Son everything that he's doing. Everything that the Father is doing. And we're going to show you that so you can marvel. You know, one of the things I love magicians, all right? I love magicians because I love this idea. You go up to somebody and they do things that just seem really weird, like almost inhuman. How did you do that? Where did that popsicle stick go? I don't know. You know? You're just like, oh, you're so... And then they show you it and it's kind of lame, right? You're like, oh, well, that's lame. But the thing is with Jesus, this isn't a trick, right? He's saying, do you see my works? They prove to you this is not a human thing. Did you guys just see that I healed a paralyzed man with just my words? I don't think you caught that because you were so worried about the Sabbath, Right? But did you see that? Did you not marvel at that? What is going to make you marvel? Says Jesus. You didn't. What's going to make you marvel? Well, no matter, says Jesus. Tell you what. I've got something even greater in mind. I'm going to do something even more controversial, even bigger, and it will get your attention, and you will marvel at it. You're thinking, what could Jesus possibly do that is greater than healing a paralytic man with his words? Seriously, what could be better than that? I mean, look at us, 2019. I don't think we even have a cure for, like, do we know anybody who could just heal anything? Do we have that technology even? No way, this is still amazing. But Jesus says, I'm going to do something worse. And look, more, verse 21, and this is our last point. For as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, so also the Son gives life to whom he will. What's greater than healing somebody? Giving them eternal life. This is his point. The Father and the Son's work is to give us life. Life. And this is incredible. What happens when you heal somebody of their sickness? Right? What's the problem? They die. Right? They may live a little bit longer, but they die. Jesus is saying, you want to talk about status quo? You want to see how the world that I see? You guys have a serious problem, humans, he says. And that's death. Because obviously he's talking about giving us life, then obviously we're dealing with death here, logically. And he's saying, you want to talk about the status quo? Have you seen the world right now? He's like, do you see the multitude of people right over there who are literally dying in such a state, hoping, begging, waiting, that maybe somebody would either give them a better life by healing them or at least prolonging their life, making it a little more comfortable? There's a world out there, and this is the same thing as today. There is a world out there who is dying. Are you okay with that, says Jesus? I don't think you are. I know you struggle with death. And to the Jews, he says, listen, why are you so concerned about keeping the Sabbath, right? I know you guys care about life. I can see it. Your religion, your rules, you're putting them there to keep you alive. You do care about life. You do. Is it helping? Because the problem, Jesus says, right? The problem he's saying, well, listen, even in your attempts to prolong it, you're actually only bringing death. I said, don't do this, that will kill you. You say, well, actually, don't do this, 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 and this as well, because that will bring death to you. And Jesus says, You may be comfortable with that. You may find that's okay, and that's the normal, but not me. What's he going to do about it, Jesus? So what are you going to do? Well, John tells us later on that Jesus is going to do something so controversial that Jesus said, you know what I'm going to do? I will die so that you can live. What? And so Jesus went up according to plan, united with the Father, same work as always, according to plan. He went up and he let himself be captured and he let himself be murdered according to plan. What? That's a ridiculous idea. Yep, because it's not coming from you. And on the cross, as he was hanging there, thinking about you, thinking that this is going to give you life, he said, "It is finished." And he lay his head down and he gave up his spirit. It is finished. My work is finished. Do you want to see God's work? Look at the cross. Do you want to see God? Do you want to marvel at God? Look at the cross, because everything was pointing to the cross. Everything was pointing that this was going to give him life. And after he died, he rose again, proving again, look at my actions, inhuman, humanly impossible. Look at my actions, I'm going to rise. I am God, and this is life. And that's the question he poses. That's the thing that he points us to. Even today, 2,000 years later, we're still thinking about this. And Jesus is saying, this is my question. Will you believe? Will you believe that I am God and that I do give life? You know, the first time that I heard this news, I got to tell you guys, this was refreshing. This was life-giving. You see, in high school, my entire high school, all the way through high school, right? My teenage years, I struggled with sin. I understood this concept of death, and maybe there's some of you here tonight, you get it. And just like this paralyzed man, I felt trapped in my sin. I was addicted to pornography. And it was so shameful. And I was so overcome with guilt. I'd go to bed, and I was a pastor's son. And my dad was a youth pastor. And I was so overcome with guilt and overcome with shame. But the message that was told to me was, you need to work hard. Work harder. You know, just give it to God. Nobody told me this message. And so every night I would cry, and every night exactly like this guy, there was nobody there to help me, and I couldn't do it on my own. And then somebody told me, no, Jesus' work is for you. It's not about your work. I want to give you life. And I believed. And he showed me how to conquer it because he already did. And so now I'm not addicted to pornography. I don't look at pornography. And I don't feel the shame and I don't feel the guilt of it because of my God. Some of you, this may be you, or you understand death in a way. You're sick. Why did Jesus ask this guy, do you want to be healed? He's asking him because, is that it? Do you just want to be healed? Because I have something better. My life will allow you to deal with any sickness. It will allow you to get through because it's so much better. You're going to have eternal life, and all you have to do is believe. And some of you may be here today, and you're like, I do believe. I do believe this. Maybe, sort of. But are you running to Jesus for life every day? Are you going to the cross every day? And saying, yeah, I need you. There's only two sides of this. Either you are the ones who says, Jesus is God, and I believe and I have the life. Or, unfortunately, you're on the other side that says, you know what? I don't believe this. I don't think this is the right way. I don't think Jesus is God. In fact, I think he was just a man, and maybe he was crucified, but I think he's dead. And you're okay with that. But my question to you is, what's your game plan? What are you going to do? What are you going to do in the face of death? How do you overcome that? Where do you get life? Jesus said, don't do that. I have come to give you life. The Father and the Son are united in the same work. It's always been this. For you to marvel, to stare in amazement at the Creator God, so that you may live. Will you believe?